Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Have you seen the New Yorker cartoon with the two turtles talking to each other? And one says, "I panicked when they said we could come out of our shells again." There's truth in the humor. For a lot of people, the reopening of, well, everything is a major source of anxiety. Interacting with coworkers again. Maybe you feel nervous about the crowds. Maybe you stopped drinking and are now worried about public pressures to throw one back. What if your appearance has changed and you aren't sure how people will react? Or maybe you just feel weird leaving your home. If any of this rings true for you, we'd love for you to share your story because we are pretty sure you're not alone. One scroll through social media and you'll see. And returning to our show to offer some guidance and perspective is Matt Lundquist, founder and clinical director of Tribeca Therapy. Matt, thank you again for coming back.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Listeners, share your stories. We want to hear from you. Are you finding yourself a bit anxious about things as we start to reopen? Have you experienced a recent moment of anxiety that maybe took you by surprise? How are you working through your worries and fears about life opening back up? Give us a call at 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. You can always tweet to us at All of It WNYC. If you want to remain anonymous, you can send us an Instagram DM at All of It WNYC. And a reminder to everybody calling, this is a no judgment zone. Matt, some people might feel a little guilty about saying this, like they don't want things to go back to normal. They don't want things to reopen. You know, I guess people think, oh, everybody should be really excited, right? We should all be really excited. What would you say to reframe this feeling if someone is indeed feeling guilty about feeling anxious?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I'm realizing that the first several times that people said this to me, including therapy patients who I've known for years and we've talked about all kinds of intimate things, you know, the first several times people said this to me, they said it kind of in a whisper, like, "I don't really want to come back." And I think that that's probably what other people are hearing in the world. It does seem like a little bit as it's getting kind of more attention and people are beginning to talk about it and we're seeing it on social media and in New Yorker cartoons. It feels like people are beginning to say it in a more fully throated way, which I think is really good because we can then have conversations like these in public and people can have these sorts of conversations with friends and bosses and coworkers. So I think this question of guilt, listen, I think that probably the best medicine for that is just that, which is to really normalize it and to help give people some context to understand it was a profound change for us to go into this 13 months ago. Of course, none of us knew it would be 13 months and counting. And I think we have to start by respecting that it's going to be a profound change to undo that, to sort of come back out of our shells. And so I think really kind of acknowledging the depths of that and recognizing that this is a feeling that a lot of people are having, I think will allow people to feel a little bit less like they need to feel bad about having those hesitations.
What are some of the language we can use to be kinder to ourselves if we are struggling with this gradual reopening?
Yeah. Well, again, I think a lot of it is exactly in acknowledging that this is the probably the most overused word of 2020, though in some ways understandably was unprecedented. And I think if kind of removing ourselves from physical closeness in the world, working from home for an extended period of time is unprecedented, then undoing that, the return from that is unprecedented. So I think this idea that I know I'm saying a bunch already of respecting the depths is so important. This is going to be a profound challenge, and there is, just as there was at the beginning of this, there is tremendous uncertainty. So I think like anything else that's a source of anxiety, I think starting with understanding and kindness is the most important piece.
And there's also an element of this that for some people, it really was traumatic. I passed by a store recently, Matt, and the sign said, "Remember last April and March? We do. Yeah. Put on a mask." And it really took me back to that moment, like how scary it was last March, April, and early May. And some people really might have some real trauma still from that moment, the idea of walking into a crowd or seeing people.
I think that's right. And I think it is really interesting that we're at just past a year. And so like the light is similar to what it was a year ago and kind of the temperature is similar. And people are, you know, now kind of back out in the world more. Listen, we as humans have this profound capacity to adapt to things, and we can take things that feel kind of extreme, uncomfortable, unbearable, and we get used to them. And I think for most people, not without a lot of grief and loss and hardship, but I think we figured it out. We figured out how to do this. We figured out how to be okay. But I think that in the being okay, it's important that we don't forget that this has been a profound trauma, and that especially last March and April were really scary. And so a lot of people, again, I think it's both the weather being at that point in the calendar again, and also the reality of people beginning to return to the office. My colleagues and I are beginning to return to the office and finding things where we left them a year ago. And I think, of course, it's reminding us of a year ago. I'm seeing people I haven't seen in a year. And I think that it is kind of bringing back to sort of the top of our desktop, in a sense, those feelings. And I think it's important to acknowledge those and for folks to spend time. And just as much as we've gotten used to this, to recognize that this was really scary. This was a validly speaking, a kind of trauma. And I don't think that it's something that needs to completely get in the way for everyone of returning to the world or kind of wreck us. But I do think one of the things that we do culturally to deal with trauma is to remember it, is to talk about it, is to name it, is to express our feelings of grief around it, to socialize them.
Let's go to Elaine, who's called in. She is on line 6. Hi, Elaine. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, Allison. This is Elena here. Thanks so much for taking the call.
So tell us about your situation, Elena.
Yeah, so I actually graduated in the pandemic from college in May 2020. So what's kind of interesting for me about reopening up is that I have never lived a post-grad adult life in normal non-pandemic times. So I think recently the pandemic ending has just kind of brought up these feelings of like, wow, real life is actually beginning now, and these delayed graduation feelings of, you know, what am I doing with my life and how am I spending it and what can I do with this newfound freedom in so many ways?
Thank you for sharing your story. Best of luck to you. Fingers crossed to you, for you. This is interesting. I think this is from Instagram. This segment is so spot on. When the pandemic started, it was like the rest of the world slowed down to a lifestyle that I'd already been living for years. I've worked at home for 10 years. I literally had no FOMO since last March, and now it's starting to creep back in. Let's go to Rachel on line 1, who has called in. Hi, Rachel. Thanks for calling All of It. How are you feeling?
Hi. How are you? I'm doing okay. One of the ways that I coped during the past year was to really overschedule myself, which was easy to do with Zoom. I signed up for classes across the country. I did a lot of volunteer work and a lot of it remote. And just this week, you know, yesterday I took a class in Portland, Oregon. I live in New Jersey. I talked to someone, a client in Buffalo. Like, you know, I couldn't do those things before the pandemic. I mean, I could do parts of them, but I really filled my calendar with opportunities that were not available. And this week I started noticing in my meetings that people want to get out and see each other and have a meeting in a park. And I really went into a bit of a panic because I don't want to. I'm not ready for that yet, even though I'm double vaxxed. So that scares me. And I don't want to seem like I'm not game and want to be involved. And then two, like, I'm going to have to change. Like, it's another change. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just trying to figure out how to negotiate that and still maintain some of those relationships that I've built up in across the country and activities that I've built up in places that aren't right here in New Jersey by me.
Let's talk about that a little bit. Rachel, thank you so much for calling in. My guest is Matt Lundquist, founder and clinical director of Tribeca Therapy. So what are some of the steps someone could take, Matt, to ease back into life, ease back to leaving the house on a more regular basis?
Sure. Yeah. Again, I think this idea we were talking about earlier, Allison, of being compassionate with yourself, I think is just a huge one. And so to recognize that for some people, I think there's lots of versions of this, and I'm sure we'll hear a lot of different experiences from callers. What I'm hearing from people I'm in conversation with in the world, from patients, is varieties of people who were either saying, actually, I always kind of liked being more physically removed from folks, being less social or being social in different ways. This has worked really well for me. Or people saying, gosh, I didn't realize I liked this, but I've come to discover this works better for me. Or people saying, I think I like the other, but as I think about making this transition, that feels scary. And so, you know, all of those worldviews need to be honored. And I do think there's an opportunity for people to learn some more about who they are and how they want to organize their lives in a whole host of ways, including socially. And so, you know, I would encourage people to come out of this perhaps being more proactive in the choices they're making about how they face the world. And if they don't want to be as social or social in the same ways, to own that and to communicate to people who want to hang out with them. But I think specifically in terms of your question, assuming that somebody really does want to get perhaps down the line to a place where they're more social, somewhat more, maybe the same as before, maybe differently, maybe more than before, I think that I would prescribe gradualism. And I think, you know, one of the advantages of that is that I do think the world is going to open up gradually as numbers go down, as vaccines go up, as people feel safer. Offices, you know, similarly, our office is going to open up gradually. So I think there's a nice parallel often to that. So I think where the slowness of the gradualism is happening because institutions or the city is deciding that, I think for people to embrace that and to use that to help slow them down. But where in instances where you need to set your own pace, I think you should set your own pace. And so I think it's starting small. Start with a more intimate gathering out in the open. Start with scheduling time perhaps to meet up and go for a walk in the park with friends, but do it perhaps maybe just an hour and a half before you need to be back home for a Zoom call, so you've got a kind of an easy and a convenient out, so that it's sort of bite-sized. And I think we do that on the assumption that as you do it, you'll sort of get your sea legs again. You'll get used to those kinds of socialization everybody's talking about and making lots of jokes about and having the experience of, you know, remembering how to make small talk and remembering how to be around bodies, how to sort of, you know, be physically in proximity to each other and all of those things. I think it's simply allowing yourself some time and some space to get used to that and letting people know that. And I think people are understanding that some people are ready to go and some people want to go more slowly. And I think good friends and colleagues and neighbors will be understanding, hopefully, of you wanting to set a kind of slower pace.
Let's check in with Joey, who is on line 7. Hi, Joey. Thanks for calling All of It. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing well. What did you want to share?
I've been thinking about, and what's been coming up for me is thinking about how the pandemic has encouraged monogamy for health reasons. And I've been thinking of finding like that I've been having anxiety around the return of polyamory and non-monogamous dating. And I'm just thinking about how that must be affecting many people who find themselves to be non-monogamous and have had health concerns over the pandemic and returning to kind of like being able to have social dynamics that are not exclusive to one partner after the pandemic has kind of like chilled out and we're all vaccinated.
Thanks for calling in, Joey. Yep, some people are not looking forward to getting back in the dating pool, Matt. What are some ways to get excited about dating again instead of dreading it?
Yeah. Well, I think certainly I can validate that from my view of the world and certainly talking with patients about dating. Mm-hmm. I think that's very true. You know, I think that the biggest thing is for people to really use this moment, whether it's a question of organizing sexual relationships around monogamy or not, or how one does dating. There's all sorts of ways of doing dating, what you're looking for, where sex and intimacy fits in, dating multiple people, dating more slowly, taking a break, those sorts of things. And so there's a way that the pandemic sort of made the decision for us, that there were certain things that weren't safe to do or didn't feel safe to do, weren't available to do. And so now that it's lifting, we're forced to kind of own some of the choices that were made for us by default. And so I think the sort of self-work to do in those moments is to take a look at what you've learned from the last year or so and allow that to inform, now that you have more options, what you want to do moving forward. So ambivalence in dating often, you know, on the surface, it seems like it's about, oh gosh, I don't know if I want to go on a date. But in reality, I think it may be expressive of, I'm conflicted about how I want to do dating or whether I want to be dating at all at this moment in my life or ever. And so I think that to sort of what we call in therapy, move towards the ambivalence and to explore more fully, is the problem simply that it feels scary and new, in which case I think getting back into it slowly and gradually, maybe inviting some friends to give you a gentle push, is the way to go? Or is it the case that actually there's some more fundamental ways that how you've done dating have been at odds with how you want to do dating, in which case reflecting on that and really making some proactive decisions about how you want to do that is the way to go?
Listeners, what are you finding yourself anxious about as we start to reopen? Have you experienced a recent moment of anxiety that took you by surprise? How are you working through those worries or fears about everything opening back up? We would love to hear your story. 646-435-7280. You can always direct message us on Instagram at @OliveWNYC if you'd like to remain anonymous. And of course, this is a judgment-free zone. We are very lucky to have Matt Lundquist, founder and clinical director of Tribeca Therapy, with us. We'll have more with Matt and more of your calls after a quick break. This is All of It. This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest this hour is Matt Lundquist, founder and clinical director of Tribeca Therapy. He's offering us some guidance as we talk about, out in the open, that people are having some anxiety about the world reopening. My next subject was going to be work, Matt, and then this tweet came over, which is perfect. It's from T. It says, I have Zoom fatigue, but it's a reality I have adjusted to. So when I heard I have an in-person interview in 2 weeks, I immediately became anxious because I haven't met anyone in person since last March, and I don't know what to expect. A lot of people are having anxiety about getting back into the face-to-face workforce. And it sounds like you've just been through this a little bit. What are some things we can do to prepare personally?
Yeah.
If we are feeling anxious about returning to the office, about having to engage with our colleagues?
There's so much to be said about this. And I think there's sort of logistical pieces and there's health concern pieces but I think that, you know, one of the things I think may be specifically related to what your caller is asking about, Allison, is, you know, one of the things is I think if the first time you've hung out with somebody in person is an interview, I think I would say schedule between now and then some time to hang out with a friend and kind of get a couple of instances of that under your belt. The other thing I would say is I think that one of the really nice things about going in this together a year ago was that we were all in this together. And so it was a shared experience. And that's a part of how we make sense of scary things and new things and traumatic things. And the reverse is true. And I think, you know, while people are in different places about how eager they are to get back and having different kinds of anxiety, it's awkward for most everybody. And I think that it actually for example, an interview, a job interview, a new work, I think that shared awkwardness can actually be a great icebreaker and can be something to kind of laugh about and perhaps add some levity to the exchange. So one thing I would point out is that everybody's in this, is in this, and I'm so glad people are talking about it more because it's allowing us to sort of normalize it and maybe not feel so worried like we need to hide it.
Someone on Instagram says, I've never had an issue with crowds. I was forced back into the office with postpartum depression and had panic attacks at Grand Central and on the train, even though I know statistically my chance of catching it is low. Mm. It's just, you know, some people really still have this fear of the virus. Obviously, it was horrific and terrible. When someone has a fear that is based in reality, has a root in reality, what are some of the things they can think about so that they can work through that?
Yeah, I think, again, this issue of gradualism feels really important. Because I'm a healthcare worker, I got the vaccine a couple of months ago, and I remember feeling like, particularly after the second one, that there was this virus that I had worked so hard in terms of protecting my own health, my family's health, but obviously protecting the community. And you know, I don't want to get COVID because I don't want to get sick, but also more importantly to me, I don't want to get people with health conditions sick. And so there was this vigilance that we really kind of embodied, and being really careful when we were, you know, in the hallways in our apartment buildings and out on the street, and being sort of really vigilant and thoughtful. And then kind of suddenly, oh, wait, you actually don't have to worry about that anymore. And so obviously continuing to do the courtesy of wearing a mask in public and those sorts of things. But sort of in your soul to begin to relax and say, wait a minute, this thing that I have been really vigilant about and frightened about perhaps for a year, wait, all of a sudden, I maybe don't need to be so scared. That's pretty wild, and I think that that's a lot to undo. And again, I think it's a vigilance that can kind of live in our bodies, in our bones, in our habits. And so, you know, the idea of being fully vaccinated, being around another fully unvaccinated person, and kind of removing your mask, maybe sharing a hug, it feels very strange. It feels like we've kind of really trained ourselves to do the opposite of that. So again, so much what I would say to this caller and others is, and listen, what I would say to employers who are setting back to work policies, by the way, is leave room for people to do this gradually. Leave room for people to be at various places in terms of people who are, you know, ready to come back 5 days a week, to folks who need to come back more slowly, and give yourself some time. I do think that this is something, you know, those turtles you referenced at the beginning, mm-hmm. Allison, with the New Yorker cartoon. I think that, of course, that's going to be scary at first when you've been in your shell for a long time. I think that for most people, they'll get used to it. They got to give themselves some time.
On Instagram, someone has written, I'm mostly terrified because just before the pandemic, I decided to try to live an anti-diet intuitive eating lifestyle. And that plus not moving as much means I don't fit into my clothes in my closet. I don't want people who don't understand what I've been struggling with in terms of wanting to free myself from diet culture, yet being terrified of getting larger. Most people think I, quote, just let myself go. A lot of people, you know, I have a friend who just stopped dyeing her hair. And she's gone completely gray. People have made all kinds of choices. Someone else I know cut all her hair off. And now we're going to see people who haven't seen us in a long time, and our parents may have changed quite a bit. How can we be okay with not caring what others think?
Yeah. I mean, I really think there's sort of two parts to the question. And I want to respond to, I think one of them is, as we return to the world and as we return to our bodies being in the world, things like kind of anti-bodies, often sexist, fat-phobic behavior are going to return. I think one of the things that people who've experienced a lot of judgment of their bodies, which can look like lots of different things and isn't just about weight, but certainly commonly that, have enjoyed is actually a break from having their bodies be around so many people. And so, unfortunately, part of the world that we're returning to is a world that includes a lot of judgments and prejudices. And so that certainly those haven't gone away. I hope in some ways that we've learned from the last year of life and to a degree, but I think that those issues are going to remain. I think it's going to be a particular challenge for some people who've experienced a lot of those and are vulnerable to experiencing a lot of those. I think the other issue I would speak to is really recognizing how much we've all changed. I think that probably as humans, particularly if you're into growth, if you just simply are going through the changes of a year on the calendar, we change probably more than we realize. And so there's the phenomenon of seeing people and being in environments that we haven't been in a year or more, which makes us notice that more. I've been talking a lot with many of my patients who've been investing in their emotional growth in the course of the last year about how much they've grown in very positive ways, but the ways in which growing positively can create new kinds of challenges in old relationships. Not everybody is necessarily so happy about the ways that you've grown and changed. So, you know, listen, I think in terms of your caller, I would support her to celebrate her body and to you know, read some Roxane Gay and really embrace being positive about her body and get some support from good, decent people in her life to tell the people who have a problem with her body to fly a kite.
Whew, you scared me there for a minute. Fly kite. Appreciate that one. Let's go to Camille on line 10. Hi, Camille. Thank you for calling All of It.
Oh, thanks. Thanks so much for having me. This is a really important topic, and Allison, your show is awesome. I hope that Matt's idea about us changing more than we realize is true, because I've been thinking a lot about returning to some of the microaggressions and racial aggressions that I was so accustomed to mm-hmm. until the lockdown. And something that we're talking about in our family a lot, and it's in contrast with the conversation that we're having about a racial reckoning when, you know, the work is not done. And I also have this fear, I've talked to a number of people about this who are of color, of like when we get back into the swing of things, we have all these lovely distractions. You know, will we also be returning to old habits? And of course, some people have never left those habits. So,
you bring up such a great point. Thank you so much for calling in. Matt, we only have about a minute left. Is there something that I didn't touch on or we didn't touch on today that you want people to take with them from this conversation?
Yeah. Well, one of the things I'm thinking about, I'm looking at my notes, Allison, from before the call. I think it's important. I was thinking about this idea of grief and the ways in which we tend to think of grief as being associated with something bad. But I also think that there's grief is maybe perhaps better understood as a kind of emotional processing of change. And so I want to kind of give your listeners permission to feel some grief in the change. And even if for most people this is better, and certainly from a health of the world standpoint, this is going to be better, to acknowledge that there's a loss here. There's a loss in time spent with family or with a partner, which, you know, has been a mixed bag, but there's right. been certainly for many people positive things. There's a loss in a period of reflection and remove from the world, and to give people permission to feel that loss.
Feel their grief. Matt Lundquist is founder and clinical director of Tribeca Therapy. Thank you as always.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.